Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is, the 21st or so?
I think it's the 23rd. Y'all know what y'all know I'm about to say. It's about to be summer.
Oh, my God.
It's summer.
About to be like Christmas,
right,
huh?
It's summer, like, right. No, but for real, when you start looking at your calendar and writing dates down for shit, like, it's summer right now.
In February.
We about to be in the first quarter already.
Definitely not summer.
It's summer.
It's
y'all
snowing
keep telling
in LA.
Me I'm wrong until you admit I'm right.
It's snowing in LA and Vegas.
Snowing all over the West. It's snowing.
I mean, that
here,
got more to
sucks.
Do with it being end of days than anything seasonal.
Yeah,
but, okay.
That's craziness.
I think snowing Jesus is sending little testers with these balloons and alien aircraft
and metal balls going up on the beach in Japan.
I saw that. What the heck?
Yeah, what was that? I don't know.
I don't know. I clicked right off of it.
Yeah, I don't wanna know. How's everybody doing, by the way?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I don't know. I feel like I was about to say something. I feel like I just came off out of something, but I think that's just, we've been in that season so long where something been janky and then get set right and whatever. It's the second day of Lent. I'm observing Lent for the first time.
What did you give up?
Since the pandemic? Well, I'm giving up bread. I gave up bread. Even though I kind of cheated last night because I had rice, which is in the same family. Mm. I didn't specifically say carbs. I said bread. So okay. Me and Jesus got to talk about
I
that.
I think you got a 65 on that. I think you got a 65 on that.
Yeah.
Get a pass.
I knew I was toeing a line, but I was like, it's first day. But what I really am trying to do is be careful. And I do try to do this every time I observe. I'm trying not to make Lent a diet and health kickoff, you know, which people tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual thing is, and I want to preface this by saying I'm not Catholic. It's not only Catholics that observe. It's just the level of observance varies a lot of times when you're Protestant. So like, I don't do the ashes and all of that, but I do observe Lent because I do believe in fasting as a spiritual practice, but fasting can mean any kind of sacrifice. So I'm giving up bread. And I'm that's the for real, like, physical sacrifice part. But I also need to limit my screen time, and that's TVs and phone. I'm still trying to tweak whether that means I can only do X number of hours, or I can only do within certain windows or whatever. But that's the distraction part that I need to get rid of to kind of bring me back to focus and get back in. And I also am trying to get back into like a regular spiritual discipline, which I really haven't been in years. So
yeah,
I'm
ain't give up
to
nothing.
Really like use the time as it's supposed to be without doing 1,000 things at once. That's not sustainable.
I ain't give up nothing. Oh my God. I do need to actually limit my social media stuff though. I do need to cut that back.
I can't take a complete social media fast because I need.
Yeah, not,
I
not,
I definitely
not, yeah,
can't
not
be
on
social media until April, but I can
yeah, but
cut,
it,
on
cut it down some. You know, cut it down some. I can cut it down some. What else? Oh, sorry, I got to tell the story because I told y'all that I passed out. So, but it wasn't a pass out like that. What happened was, and now you'll definitely get this. So the pain is finally starting to subside for the shingles. Finally, right? This is like week 6, week forever, right? But it's finally starting to subside. So Saturday, my cousin and her husband, they went away for the anniversary. So Saturday, I got up, no, it was Sunday. Sunday, yeah, Sunday. I got up about 10, you know, regular, you know, Sunday morning, get something to eat. And then I was like, you know, the kids were still asleep or whatever. So I was like, I'm just going to lay back down for a little bit. And next thing I know, my cousin had come here from Kentucky. He was in my doorway. He was like, yo, man, it's 6:30. And I was like, what are you talking about, 6:30? He was like, it's 6:30. I was like, in the morning? He was like, no, 6:30 at night. I was like, what? What happened? Like, because you know what happens is the pains. I haven't really slept.
Like, yeah, really that happened slept. To me. My body was just like, sleep.
Yeah,
sleep,
it just conked now, out. Yeah. I just crashed. That's what I meant by passing out. So I just, boom. So I got up. I got up for a second. One of my homeboys called me from New York and he's talking. I'm stumbling over my words. I just can't like get it together. So then I was like, okay, we hung up and I was like, cool, I'm gonna lay down for a sec. My cousin asked me what I wanted to eat. And I was so groggy. I was like, okay, give me some pancakes and hash browns. It was like 7 o'clock at night. So when he came, he was like, we back. So I was like, cool. So I laid back down, passed out again. And my little cousin was like, Jeff, your food's getting cold. So I stumbled to the kitchen, talking and whatnot, ate the food. It was actually good from Cracker Barrel. Then
shout out to Cracker Barrel. They may be racist, but that food be hit.
The food was hit.
They get them pancakes right.
Yeah, it was their pancakes was perfect actually. Then we walked. Then we sat on the couch and we watched an All-Star game. Watched the draft of the players and like the first quarter. The next thing I knew was 11:30. Passed out again. They was leaving. They was like, all right, man. I was like, what time is it? Like, it's 11:30. I was like, what's going on? I don't even remember walking to the bed. I don't even remember that.
Do you know what this sounds like? This sounds like a month after you bring a baby home.
And you just crash.
You just be in a fugue state.
Yeah.
You'd be so scared that first month.
Yeah.
And then you finally like get a hang of it and your baby starts sleeping a little bit. And then maybe somebody comes to help.
And then you pass out.
14 hours later. Like,
yep.
That was me for like a week. I think about a week too, Jeffy. Like after, like you said, after the pain finally subsided for real, my body was just like, sleep, please. Yep. I was sleeping like the dead. Like the I'm usually a light sleeper. Like Jason actually took a picture of me and sent it to Cheyenne, and he was like, "Why she look like she been trapping?" Like, because I was so knocked out.
Yeah, your body just crashes. You know, yeah. When I was stoned to the bed, next thing I knew it was 6:30 in the morning.
Because I had basically a month of not really being able to sleep.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Hours at a stretch. You know,
that's what I'm saying. Because you get a few hours, and then the pain wakes you up, and you go up at 3:30 in the morning, and you. You might fall back to sleep to like
and it's 6 or 8. And it's a fitful sleep when you do sleep, you know.
It's not comfortable. So that's what I mean.
Also,
so I was
like, you can't be in the group chat just like, hey guys, I passed out. LOL. Ha ha. You muted.
Like you specifically, Jeffrey Sledge, cannot
I'm good.
Be in
the group chat. My just talking about passing out. Blood pressure's good.
Don't call your mama because I was about to call my mama like, Jeffrey done passed out.
I'm like, Lord, he was in the grocery store.
You should use some different words. I was so obvious that bro called me. He was like, yo, you good? Because he saw I wasn't on the group chat. He was like, you okay? I was like, today I am, but yesterday I didn't know what was happening. You know, just conked out.
That's the worst, too. It's like, it's the best sleep, but the worst sleep when you wake up and you don't know if it's day, if it's early morning, late night.
Yeah.
The day you fell asleep the next day.
I didn't know nothing.
You think you late for the school bus. Like, it'd be all kind of shit. You don't know what.
If my cousin wasn't here and he hadn't come, you know, I probably would have slept, I don't know, how much longer. Like, if he hadn't woke me up, because I was out. But I'm all right. I'm on the mend. Did y'all watch the All-Star game, by the way?
Absolutely not. But I was subjected to 2 hours of First Take coverage the next morning.
Put his thumbs down.
It was terrible.
You know, Stephen A. and them hollering. Although the points were valid.
He wasn't wrong. He wasn't Stephen A.
All-Star isn't wrong. I stopped watching All-Star because it's not fun anymore. Like, the whole draw of it, you know, celebrity, like, You got a kid in the dunk contest who ain't even played an NBA game yet.
Yeah, you might not even like a G League.
Yeah, not that he don't have skills, but like he definitely ain't an all-star. You know, he's not even a rookie for real.
But they just, that's the thing, they can't get any of the big name since
right. Stephen A. And I also think Stephen A. is right that this is LeBron's fault.
Yeah, he stopped doing it, and then that caused other big names to stop doing it.
Sean, you disagree?
I totally disagree. It's not LeBron's fault, and I'll tell you why. One, like, we have this theory that the stars always are in the dunk contest because we vividly remember Michael and Dominique, and we vividly remember. Well, let me. Okay, so we're gonna do some numbers now, right?
Okay.
So Mike doesn't do the dunk contest after 88, right? Like, so to be fair, Mike is a star in America during that period, but he really blossoms between 88 and 92 as a star internationally.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I just think that it's always easy for us to say that the stars, you know, don't do this or they don't do that. Right. But the reality is Vince Carter was the last actual all-star in a dunk contest. That was 23 years ago.
But I do think it's fair to say that even because the criticism with LeBron was that he was still a rookie phenom. You know what I mean? And like it used to be even if you weren't like a LeBron level, right? You would still do it. I think that now it's like you don't have any kind of known names even in their rookie year.
Yeah, because Kobe did it.
Who are doing it?
Dwight Howard did it.
But
Kobe did it. Kobe did it at a point in his career where he was not the Kobe that we remember. So because they transitioned into superstars, we often put that on them. But they were not superstars when they did this.
But I think the point with LeBron is that he kind of made it. And I guess this is why I say I agree. LeBron, in a lot of ways, and I'm not. I don't want to knock him per se, but to me, LeBron represents the dividing line between the NBA I know and this player autonomy NBA, which is not a bad thing, but like the heavy trades, the choices that you're not going to really play regular season, you're going to play more the back end of the season, you're going to rest, you're going to do this and that. And it's a different game, and All-Star seems to be the place where you see that the most. I also think that changing it from East West changed the entire dynamic, and I think it's stupid with these team coaches. But that's where I kind of agree that, like, LeBron saying, I'm not doing a dunk contest for whatever reason. It's like more newer players after that were like, well, if he ain't doing it, I ain't got to do it. And to me, the point of All-Star was to watch, like, the camaraderie between the players, kind of watch them clown, not take themselves too seriously, have a good time. And, like, that element seems to be gone.
I just think it's hilarious that more people watch the Pro Bowl than the All-Star game.
Because nobody watches the Pro Bowl.
Because the Pro Bowl is straight flag football, which is hilarious.
Yeah, and NBA, the All-Star game is now zero defense, like nothing.
It's not.
There was a bright spot, though. Shout out to Janelle Monáe and her cute self.
the celebrity game is the fun part now.
Yeah, they do a lot of different things, and I think that there are a lot of obligations. I saw a lot of people complaining about it being in Utah. I mean, that really had nothing to do with it. It was a shit show the year before that, and it'll be a shit show next year. Like, I think there's a lot of pomp and circumstance. It's not really a game that none of these guys enjoy playing, right? Like, it turns into almost like this weird skills competition where there's just these, you know, ridiculous dunks and alley-oops and motherfuckers are shooting from half court. We've seen better action in clips of NBA players playing pickup at Lifetime. Like, they're playing harder there than they are at the All-Star game. And I've seen some people talk about making it, you know, putting money up and all of that sort of stuff. And I mean, listen, can you do that? I mean, sure, you can, right? But like, is, you know, like, to me, that's just not really worth it. And also, too, like, as a commissioner, like, Adam Silver, like, you got to get fucking reins on this shit. Like, this is your flagship this is your flagship product, right? And the Super Bowl is a little bit unique in that it's not usually like barring a home team making the Super Bowl, it's off site. It's a destination. It's not like that for the finals. The only thing you can do is All-Star Weekend. So if you're going to have this sort of lack of, you know, I don't really give a fuck, I don't really want to be here energy, like it's actually hurting your product way more than it's helping. Like it's just not really necessary to have.
Yeah, they got to do some fix ups because, like I said, it's like, I mean, it's going to start. I see it coming, man. Like the next couple of years, a lot of cats are just going to not go. Like, I got voted in, but I ain't going
to
go.
Yeah, I mean, and they do that. And to be honest, man, they do that now. And, you know, like I said,
but LeBron didn't get there till like Sunday.
Yeah, because either it's a break or it's not. You can't say we're going to do an All-Star break. First of all, the All-Star break used to happen literally at the midseason point, right? Now
the All-Star it's like the back third.
It's like, yeah, it's like there's 60 games in. These guys are fucking, you know, again, the long-term issues are that they have, you know, that they're playing a lot. Like these guys are playing a lot of fucking basketball now from the time that they're like 13. Like this is a lot, you know, they either it's a break or it's not. But you can't say, hey, we're going to do an All-Star break, but you guys got to go to 17 corporate events every day and right. show up and, you know, do jazz hands for the kids. And you, then it's not a break.
Well, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like, and I'm saying this as a layperson, but it sounds like, you know, Adam Silver and them need to decide what All-Star Weekend is supposed to be for the organization, right? Like, because the NBA Finals are not comparable to Super Bowl in terms of, like, the weekend of events and all of that, right? So, and...
Not even close.
Yeah, not even close. But, you know... Does there need to be a certain amount of player requirement? Does there need to be? Because the other thing that Stephen A. said, which I think has some validity to it, is that the NBA is facing a challenge all the way around because players are also, you know, moving the load management to the back of the season and not playing as many, you know, regular season games and saving everything for the back end after All-Star Weekend. And, you know, the different networks that they have the contracts with are asking questions and people don't want to buy the tickets and, you know, like all of that. So I think that, you know, as much as I appreciate the fact that players have so much of a voice and have so much power in the NBA over what they are and aren't going to do, it's a challenge to the brand and the entertainment value of the product. That part I agree with.
Yeah, it's, I mean, listen, I think there are a lot of people here to blame. Like, I think owners as well, right? Like, I don't think that there's any, I think there's enough blame to go around as to why the league is sort of dwindling. But I also think we have to remember that the league, while it is dwindling with its US base, that they are focused on places like Asia and they're focused on places like, Africa, and they're focused on places worldwide to grow their game. As you can see, you know, a lot of these stars are not American born. You know what I'm saying? Like the days of the, so we had a very long stretch of NBA stars and NBA players having almost like this same sort of identical background. And that background tended to be single parent homes from the inner city. And they had this incredible grittiness and toughness. And now what we're seeing is we're seeing driveway kids. We're seeing kids who are privileged. We're seeing kids who are being trained. We're seeing kids who are, you know, ultimately, and I've said this before, they're operating like pros by the time they're 13. These kids are eating, they eat what they kill, okay? They're bouncing right. around to these made-up schools. They're going here. They're going there. They're like... Their parents are signing over guardianship to them to right. to go sleep on somebody's because that's what they think it takes to get to the next level. And that's what they're willing to do. So when you see these kids being lackadaisical or you see and you see these young people, like the way they fraternize and the way they don't necessarily see the game with this intensity is because this is the intensity that they're always like they've been doing this for so long. By the time they right. get to the NBA, they're fucking veterans.
Tired, yeah.
Okay. They're veterans. And guess what? We keep comparing the fire to that of Isaiah Thomas and Michael Jordan. And my nigga, you're never getting that again. Like, leave that shit alone, okay?
That's fair.
About these legends, we want them to be Mike. And nobody is, like, Michael Jordan right now at 60 years old will literally tell one of these niggas to go put their sneakers on. Right now. And he is not laughing. There's no LOL. There's no fucking joke. And he will go give one of these young boys the work. That's just in him. Magic ain't doing that shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Magic nobody's doing that shit.
That's you also think
Charles Barkley get doing that shit?
That's what frustrates me about people talking about the greatest of all time and like LeBron versus Magic versus Mike versus. You cannot compare these folks because
they're not apples to apples.
One of them at all. Each one of them changed the league and made it different than what we see or what we were seeing at the time. So the league that LeBron is playing in is not the same league that Mike was playing in, which is not the same league that Kareem was playing in, and so on and so forth. So you can't make these weird ass comparisons and say what's, you know, what's good at the time versus not.
It
frustrates me.
And the irony is that the more autonomy players have from a younger age, the more it's going to change what the sport looks like for entertainment. Like, I don't enjoy college ball as much because some of the players that we got to enjoy for 4 years, they're going into the league. You know, it's not the same.
Early. Yeah.
And I'm happy for them, but it changes the experience as a fan.
We want league loyalty. We want people to go and sign. Oh, I'm going to play here for my career and all of that shit. Like, you telling that to a kid that went to 5 high schools in 4 years. I mean, what are we talking about?
He's just chasing the bread.
They bounce. Dude, they'll bounce from AAU team to AAU team. They bounce around because this is the game. And I've always said this, like, the nastiest part of sports, and I know that it's probably college football and high school basketball. Like, they're fucking dirty. They're disgusting with how adults
act
around these kids and what they do to these children. Like, the way they're, and we've seen this in Last Chance U, how that kid went from Cleveland and he got shipped out to California to you know, his mama done signed over guardianship. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what happened? That man put his ass out. And now this kid is wandering around California trying to figure out what the next thing is for his life. Right. Like, so this is a part of the culture that no one wants to address. This is a part of the culture that these guys make an enormous amount of money. Guess what? $1 million doesn't really move the needle for them. It doesn't. I know that sounds crazy to a person who $1 million for them is like someone telling you, yo, I want you to come in on Saturday and you're going to make $40.
Right, right.
And 20 of that is going to taxes.
Right. Yeah, it's all the sports, because we about to see the same shit in football now that the kids can get that, like, their endorsement.
Oh, the NIL?
Yeah, now that the kids need the NIL, like, it's about to change literally the game.
Crazy. Yeah.
And I know these boosters going to be mad as fuck, but it's about to change. And the fans are too. But it's like, the problem with sports is that we are trading on human capital, literally. We are trading on these people. It is a form of gladiatorship. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just...
A friend of mine is a Villanova graduate. They literally were asking for donations to be made for NIL fund, to which he obviously lost his shit and sent them, you know, a grandiose way of saying, get the fuck out of here. But I want you guys to like process that. Villanova.
That's the only way that schools are going to be able to compete now, because no matter how great your program is, these kids are going to be like, fuck you, you, pay me. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And guess what, man? You find it for everybody else, right? You find it for the coach. You fire a coach. Those contracts are usually guaranteed. You have to pay those coaches out.
Yep.
You find it for assistant coaches. You find it for the facility. You find it for everyone else, okay? So if you can't find another $50,000, then they're going to go to this other school. Yeah. And that is just the game that you got. The reason it's like this is because you guys – fought tooth and fucking nail to not give them anything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right? So now they about to charge you for what you did to the cold crush.
Cold crush. Pretty much.
You got
this. Makes me think of that the coach that was really upset because he couldn't get to Bronny James without speaking to his mom first.
Yeah.
So it made me think, like, what is your normal process?
Exactly. Yes,
the normal process. To the parents. Like, it's pissing you off to talk to his mom.
Also, well, how did you think you were going to get to Bronny James?
Hello?
Would you rather talk to LeBron? Like,
the problem is that. So normally you would probably have some level of a go-between, maybe a coach or AAU person or somebody like that. And usually you will talk to the parents, right? That's not uncommon, except Savannah is not a regular mom.
Right. You can't game her.
You will have to go through a publicist and a lawyer, and you will be vetted. You will be better.
You're gonna get a 15-minute time slot next Tuesday at 9:45.
Yeah, and listen, and here's my thing. If you want Bronny James, guess what? If it's 9:15, you fucking show up at 8:45 and you bring some fucking donuts and coffee and some flowers. Okay. Yeah, right. And you sit there and you wait patiently. Cause she's probably gonna come in at 9:30 and you're probably only gonna get 12 minutes and not the 15, niggas. So you better have your fucking
self. And it ain't gonna be undivided attention. So
if you want him, this is the cost of wanting him, because they know what, like, again, you can't game them and you can't buy them.
What are you really not getting them now, because look at the mess you created.
Dude, what are you going to do? You think you're going to show up with a bag like a 50 grand in a duffel bag and that's moving?
In a sweatshirt.
Like, nigga, that's lunch money. For Zori, nigga, what are you talking about?
Me that would be a coach, and I know we on the subway. That also tells me that would be a coach that would be mad because he feels like Bronny is entitled. You know what I'm saying? Like,
He is entitled. He is entitled. He's not gonna be a regular kid on campus, okay? He's gonna show up in a fucking $300,000 car. I don't know what to tell you.
Also, I know we missed talking about the Super Bowl. That doesn't really matter, but I wanted to mention Rihanna's performance. I actually thought it was good.
I loved it.
Especially for like a woman who seems to be at least 5 to 6 months pregnant.
That's what I'm saying. If she's either very late second trimester or early third.
Yeah.
And there has never been.
You are bigger in your second pregnancy it's within 5 years. So she could be like four.
But I feel like when you're that level of celebrity, you are avoiding, I mean, not that she was contracted to play Super Bowl, so not that she could really avoid it, but I feel like kind of like B didn't reveal her pregnancy until she was like 6 months. You know what I'm saying? So even for that, I just feel like somewhere between 4 and 5, right? But that said, what shocked me about people's feedback, first of all, Rihanna is not Beyonce.
Yeah, so it's like they wanted her to come out and do like a imitation Beyonce performance.
Rihanna's
that's not what she does.
And I mean, well, let me back up. There's two comments. The one is about Rihanna specifically. The second is about Super Bowl halftime. Super Bowl halftime is a medley performance. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Now, what that artist chooses to do with that medley, like last year, Dr. Dre is a producer, so he brought out a bunch of artists, right? It was Dre's Super Bowl to curate, right? Sometimes, yes, artists decide they're going to bring out guests. They're going to give guests their own set. Like the time Beyonce did Formation and Bruno Mars performed, that was actually Coldplay's halftime. Mm-hmm. They knew they couldn't keep the attention, right?
Everybody forgot that's Coldplay. That was Coldplay.
But like YouTube ain't coming out. When YouTube did Super Bowl halftime, they ain't bring out shit. You know what I'm saying? Like
Neither did Prince.
It varies depending on who it is. But what people want right now is that they want it to look like an award show performance. Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing. It's not necessarily going to be a bunch of collaborators and all that. But also, people don't appreciate the quality of production. Those suspended stages, fucking stunning. Her dancers were fucking stunning. And if you've ever been to the Super Bowl, we said before, that actually was a better viewer experience, I promise, for a lot of people than just having a stage on the field.
Well, she got the highest rated performance ever.
It was amazing.
Her performance was got higher ratings than the game.
I believe that.
It was a good game.
Yeah. No, it was a good game. Yeah. People kind of tapped in for her, and I guess some people tapped out after. But I thought she did a good job. I wasn't mad at all.
And I thought it showed an entertainer who made an effort to put together a visually stunning show, knowing their physical limitations. Right.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great show. I thought she sounded great, actually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think people are spoiled, and I think people have this enormous amount of expectation on every performance. And what happens is like if a performer doesn't perform exactly to their specifications or to their liking, then it's trash. Like everything is extreme. It's either I loved it, it was the greatest thing to ever have happened, mm-hmm. or I hated it and she's terrible. And if you've ever followed Rihanna in any sort of way, I don't know how you didn't expect what she gave.
Yeah. Like that was because right. Rihanna is not a high, she's not a high energy performer. She gives you vibes and attitude. She's not giving you a bunch of her dancers.
A bunch of choreographed dancing.
Yeah, her dancers do the heavy lift. I was like, if anything, she might have gave you a couple more wines and butt cheeks might have flopped a little bit more for some twerk. Like that's about it. Her face, she doesn't give you a lot of emotion on the face. She's not that person. And then they're mad at like the looks and stuff. But I'm like, I thought, all things considered, I was like, she looks comfortable. Mm-hmm. She looked to me like she was enjoying herself. And that production was fucking phenomenal.
I do want to mention that giant red cape.
It was an homage to Andre Leon Talley. Yeah. And people were like, she in a bathrobe. And I'm like, y'all got no taste in culture.
They were close. And he really loved her. So it was cool to see her. I really liked it.
So now we can slide to, I guess, controversy. Everybody was complaining about her. A lot of niggas was complaining about her Vogue cover because
niggas is
on the cover.
Was it a lot of niggas or was it that one post?
It was
that
a few loud ran? Motherfuckers.
Okay, maybe it was that, but it was.
I mean, because you know,
niggas, you know, because she was in
you
front.
You right, Sean? You right.
She's in front, as she should be. The cover's about her. It's not
He's
about Rocky.
Rihanna.
Yeah, and Rocky's back there.
Rocky is a star, but he is not Rihanna.
He's not the first family that we've seen on a Vogue cover, guys. Like,
right. But also, Rihanna is the cover story subject. She is going to be in the lead of the photo. That is simply about composition. And honestly, it's like, it's exhausting at this point, the way that motherfuckers be reaching, bending, flipping,
drawing geometric shapes.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, the fucking show.
Like, talking about cock shame and all that. Like, nigga, all that is like, she is a fucking billionaire. She's a young black female billionaire. She is the one
my favorite. When they draw the triangle.
She is the one who's, she's the one who's doing Super Bowl halftime. She's the one who's pregnant. She's the one who's the billionaire. If it was an ASAP Rocky cover, that would have been different. It's a Rihanna cover.
Exactly.
Like, be happy ASAP on that.
He's there supporting.
That's what I was about to say. What is he even doing right now? He's being a dad at home.
Exactly. I would probably say this, and this is completely me talking shit and making this up. But I would say that they likely wanted Rihanna and the baby.
Right.
Yeah.
And she likely said, absolutely the fuck not, because he has a father. Okay, and we're not about to do this optics.
I'm in agreement with that.
That shit happens more than you would think. More than you would think. And so that was probably what it was. It wasn't going to hurt that it was ASAP because he's not fucking Joe the policeman.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not like he's, you know what I'm saying?
He ain't working down to the plant.
He ain't down to the plant working 412. Right. So
the
it's
nigga
not
ain't gonna
like
try to show up
cash.
in some Dockers. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. He, Car. You know, so I can totally see how that would have played out.
Is one of my favorite references I think that's ever happened on this show. Congratulations. That was good. Really good.
But like, He, to me, it was, I mean, listen, man, like, she's going to always be the star. I say this with some level of understanding of having a wife who is clearly more recognizable than an average person, mm-hmm. right? Like, yeah, dude, that's a part of what that, that's a part of what comes with that, mm-hmm. okay? That's a part of what comes with that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what the other thing is like.
Oh, wait, I want to went to the other thing.
If he's okay with it, can y'all niggas shut?
Yeah, he ain't complaining. He's happy.
A lot of y'all are either single, divorced, out here with multiple kids you ain't fathering.
And they
complain. It's like the Venn diagram between the niggas who want to talk about demasculation and the niggas who don't actually do
anything.
Shit.
I find it, I just want to say this.
Before
you go, Jeff, I do want to say this. I find there's to be some irony in all of the men being very sassy on social media,
mm-hmm.
referring to emasculated men. Like the fact that they're not connecting the dots of them being sassy online.
And messy, yes.
And very messy, spicy. Right? Like, and very, yeah. It's a lot of sass, my nigga. A lot of sass for a masculine man.
That said, everything emasculates now except being broke. Like, can mm-hmm. we get it together?
For real.
And then we had to get that. We went from that into sissifying our men because of the Jonathan Majors GQ cover.
Which is one of the sexiest things I've ever seen. Like, can we talk about it?
I mean,
Miguel has no.
Wait, because ahead, of the ebony cover or because of the GQ cover?
I think it was
the ebony.
Oh, it was ebony.
The ebony cover.
Valentine's
Day. That was for the ladies. Cover. That ain't even for y'all. Like, stop it. And that was very masculine. It was for the women. Super it did what masculine. It was supposed to do. The nigga is in boxing trunks throwing roses at the bitches. Like, how is that emasculating? Like,
he's beautiful. And not nigga. Saying nothing. Not pissing me off in any way.
And it's nothing. There's nothing. There's nothing. You know, he's a masculine.
His muscles
dude,
like, all the egg yeah. cow like
very cut, very smooth.
Yeah.
Very oh no, not that cover. It was GQ when he has the boots on.
Oh, I ain't seen.
Oh, that's not an ebony. Okay, well, yeah,
I think that was GQ when he has the high boots on and this kind of dope coat.
He's dressed like the anime dude. That.
Yes,
because he's been
not mad
like,
at it.
Marvel
been like a pink
yeah,
furry
yeah, he's
thing.
Yeah, that's how Kang looked.
Those were the same jean boots that Miguel had on at the Grammys, and not a word was uttered. Literally the same thing.
In his wardrobe, can we not?
It's jeans with a boot attached to it. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't understand. And also, like, nigga, like, why? I just never understood men being so overtaken and so concerned with, like, the other men. Like, could you imagine our fathers being like, oh, this Billy D, nigga, you know, fuck out here. This nigga a masculine.
Got his cum.
No, nigga.
I don't remember no black man talking about black men walking around with this codpiece on, Like, come on, people. It's like, our parents are from the funk and soul era, and niggas be talking about when men was men. We always reference that picture of the Isley Brothers where motherfuckers is trying to clown, and we's like, how many hidden knives and blades?
Mm-hmm. And George Clinton, you know, like, Parliament Funkadelic, and all them dudes.
Got a gun holster on it while you playing. Yeah,
so, I don't know, man. Niggas got to pull it together, man.
Creed motherfuckers talk about everything except actual character. Like, people talk about everything except actual character and what makes you, you know, like, and responsibility and actual, like.
And plot twist, we don't know shit about Jonathan Majors.
Except that he was a white woman, which black men love to utilize against black women who find him sexy.
We don't even know that he is dating her. We know that he
has
a child with her.
But also, I don't give a fuck. I actually don't give a fuck. We've said this before.
I don't care about that at all.
You date as long as you don't feel like you have to slander black women in the process of dating them.
Exactly. So let's move on to, I wanted to mention Pharrell.
Well, wait,
Williams.
Before we get to Pharrell, before we move off sports, should we mention Dion?
What do you do?
When he was talking about who he targets when he's recruiting players, like how would a QB, he's looking for a two-parent family home, but with a running back, he's looking for a single. I don't know, Sean, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, so basically he basically made the statement that I actually think is not uncommon, but he said that during recruiting for quarterbacks, he's looking for QBs that come from two parent stable households. Mm-hmm. And when he's looking for defensive ends and defensive linemen, he's looking for single parent households that are, you know, living in, you know, under the poverty line in most cases.
Really?
Yes. There has always been, and there continue. I mean, ultimately, what he's saying, I don't think is uncommon, but it does feed into
the racial components. Coming from him.
Yes. It feeds it because it feeds into the racial components that white people, particularly in the NFL and in football in general, have consistently placed on us. Right. Like the idea is that a kid coming from a two parent household is much more likely to be able to retain and accept structure. Right. So that quarterback is going to accept coaching. That quarterback is going to be more poised. That quarterback is going to be more in line with sort of top down structure, right? And this defensive lineman, right, because he is coming from such a place of poverty that there is almost like the expectation is that there's an inherent anger. There's like this inherent
like an bullish aggressiveness
that comes with that. And it feeds into it's a harmful thing to say. Because when we look at our television and we see nothing but black defensive linemen, maybe outside of the J.J. Watts of the world, you know, like in the Nick Bosa's, right? Like we mostly see that as black players in that position. And now we're seeing black QBs be a little bit more accepted, but that is still considered a white position, right? So mm-hmm. ultimately, that's kind of what he's saying. Again, I don't think what he is saying is limited to him. I think that is the culture of football.
Hear it come from Deion, and it kind of speaks to what we were saying about Deion when he left Jackson State. To hear Deion as a black coach perpetuate these stereotypes and this predatory language when it comes to recruiting athletes, black athletes specifically, it's hurtful and it's harmful, like Sean said. And I'm just like,
giving you can tell that Deion,
to say it on a public platform in an interview, like it's whatever, and almost be like jovial about it, like just an offhanded comment, Deion is not used to having to check his words. You can tell.
It's like the combine is very much a slave auction.
It is,
you know, replica. This is very much giving me overseer who's looking for these same kinds of things in specific positions. I think that made me really sad.
Yeah. And I think that for me, I think that the combine and I think that the nature of football gets very, very difficult to toe that line because your body is your business.
Mm-hmm.
Right. How you look, how you run, how you just all of those things are the difference between you being a first round draft pick or a sixth round draft pick. It is a difference between you buying your mama that house or, you know, not being able to do so. So I understand that there's an ickiness to it. Right. But to see someone who is supposed to be sort of chartering new territory falling into the same old
shit. Yeah.
And listen, even back to him talking about the crime in Colorado now, like you can tell that there's just like this constant dig.
Yeah, he's like, I don't even see no cops out here.
Everyone has moved on, my guy. Everyone has moved on. You know, it is what it is. You know, God bless, go forth and prosper. But like the whole magnetic personality thing has sort of become his brand, right? Mm-hmm. Like if Deion wasn't a coach, he'd absolutely be selling seminars. He'd absolutely be doing luncheons and empowerment shit with niggas get them dry ass chicken breasts for $250.
Selling five links.
Yeah, selling five. He'd be doing all that shit. And he'd be great at it.
Yeah. But yeah, so I didn't know about that. I want to mention Pharrell Williams, who got the job as the creative director for menswear at Louis Vuitton. was announced last week. So he's taking, taking Virgil Abloh's slot.
I'm expecting a rant from Kanye to be forthcoming.
But Kanye,
into the void, because who gives a fuck?
Yeah, and Kanye just put himself so far out of the position to even be thought of at that, for that type of job. It's ridiculous. No, they're not going to hire somebody who they think is some Nazi. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just whatever. But yeah, I'm interested to see what Pharrell does. It's obviously been big time in the fashion for a long time. He's had, you know, his own brand, BBC, Human Made. So he's done it, not on a Louis Vuitton level, on a small level, but he's done it. And I'm really curious to see where he goes with this and what his line will look like.
That's exciting. He's one of the people I think of when I think stylish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. So I'm cheering for him. I wanted to mention that Southside, Judge Mathis, and People's Court are canceled last week. Judge Mathis, I guess he's going to be flipping already. I don't know if People's Court's going to come back. And I saw today that the guy from Southside, one of the guys from Southside said they're shopping it around now. Yeah. So they want to try to, you know, find a new home for it, I guess, you know. But yeah, man, the Southside, you know, as y'all know, is one of my favorite shows. So
it's canceled. Such a good show.
Yeah, HBO Max is just wild. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel like they should. I feel like I want to know the name of that executive. And I feel like they should they need to answer for this shit. The same way coaches got to answer for losses and they got to do their press conference. I think these fucking executives that keep canceling these shows need to fucking get in front of people and explain why. Like, tell us why.
Canceling
exactly.
And fully removing from the platform.
Yeah.
It's not watchable in any way.
What a friend of mine who is in a lot of writers' rooms in LA and writes for a couple of big series told me was that, you know, sometimes it could be any number of things, but basically what's going on with HBO Max is that they are canceling a bunch of stuff so that they actually want the company to take a loss this year so that they can write it off. So that's why they're not just canceling but pulling.
Yeah, I mean,
so they can make it a total loss.
I understand that. Listen, the thing about HBO, and I will give them the benefit of the doubt, is that HBO has, by and large, been a network where there is a lot of incubation. They don't really move fast. When you go into that HBO system, that shit takes a very long time. You know, a lot of their hit shows were in development for a very long time before they were, you know, finally pushed out. So I think that they might want to try and go back to that. And I mean, this kind of taps into, you know, how I've been feeling about Netflix lately, which is, you know, their cancellations are really wild because they're not even building their library. Like HBO right. Max has a library that they can depend on. They can lean on, you know, people wanting to see the programming that they own and IPs that they own. But Netflix really has virtually no original programming and so little that it's not a sustainable thing. Like, you're not going back to watch these shows because
most of it is licensing.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're only doing two seasons of a show or maybe three seasons of a show, you're not building that library for the next, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Right. So then you're back to, you're going to look up and now it's fucking 2028. And now you have to go back to the drawing board and try to get these other programs that are, in fact, not even going to be available because every network has now either folded into or put their stuff on a different platform. Right. So
one of the things my friend told me was, like, the cancellations can be about any number of things. Like, for example, when Lovecraft Country got canceled, it's because it was so expensive to make. And also, allegedly, Misha Green is really bad at taking notes from executives, right? So it can be they don't take our notes, it's really expensive, or it takes too long to develop, it takes too long in between seasons. We have, you know, it could be, you know, any number of things. But in the case of HBO Max, they just going through slash and shit. And it's not even really a ratings thing. And I think that's what's difficult. And this is when, I guess, and Sean, you know this better than anybody, I would imagine, like, networks operating on a pure bottom line system instead of, like, an actual entertainment value system gets tricky.
Yeah, I mean, they do, right? Like, there are some programs that you kind of have to just take it on the chin and say, hey, man, like, this is going to be, this is a special show, mm-hmm. right? Like, I don't know what the bottom line was for The Wire, right? But I have to know that by season three, you know that this is something special. This is not just a regular show, right? Like, this is going to be a classic show. You know, by season two of The Sopranos, this is a fucking hit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand.
And that you need to see it through. Like,
and we've talked about this. We've also talked about this in music, right? Like, we pull up several artists today that are superstars that had they been signed 10 years, 15 years later, would have never even gotten a second album mm-hmm. because their first album didn't do well. Because a lot of times you have to make the investment, right? Like, I'll use this as a quick example, just as on an artist level. Like, we look at Her, like, that was years of development by Jeff. Yeah,
two different labels.
That was a lot.
And I was surprised they did it then, like, to be honest, because she, they were doing that with her at a time when labels had completely moved away from that level of artistic creation and development.
Yeah. And so we need to kind of get back to that. And so I don't know if HBO felt like, you know, whatever it is. And I mean, I'm kind of joking, but I do feel like people are enjoying. Like, this was not a dud, my guy. Like, yeah. I feel like you owe people an explanation. You know what I'm saying? I feel like you do. I just like, that's crazy to me to just pull a show like
that. And also from a creator standpoint, like, you put so much work into this, you put your heart and soul into this, and then, you know, you sell it to somebody. It's really hard because, you know, there are so many concepts that went into development or got bought, went to pilot, and like never saw the light of day. And this is like, this is a year plus of somebody's life. You know what I mean? And my friend told me that one thing about the Writers Guild is that they try to make sure if a network decides not to take your show or you get pulled off a show, they make sure you get paid out and you're good for at least a year so you can go into development for something else.
Do something else, yeah. So I don't know, man. I hope they find a home. I know none of y'all watched Last of Us, which was like...
I do.
You watched this week?
Oh, with the boy and his brother?
No, there's one after that.
Okay, I got
one. So it was a great episode. And then, no spoilers. And then this week's episode of Abbott Elementary was incredible. Like, again, no spoilers, but maybe the best of the season so far. And they've already had two or three possible best of the seasons so far. So please watch that.
I'm really pissed I missed it, but I'm gonna squeeze it in today for sure.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. What we think about these UFO balloons?
It's none of my business.
I don't really think anything about them.
I don't think that those were UFO balloons. I know. Listen, I joke a lot about Jeff and his tinfoil hat. I know that, right? However, I was a little like, maybe this nigga might be right early on against what my internal feeling was. But I do believe that these are these were balloons. These were
China.
I also think that these are these were internal, like there might have been things from the U.S. or, you know, hey, we're doing this experiment. We're doing this, that, and the third. I don't believe that there were UFOs floating around above like fucking Wyoming. I don't. Let me finish. I also don't think that we're the only ones here.
Mm.
Right? So I'm saying.
No, 100%.
Yeah, like, I don't think that these were, like, UFO. So, unidentified flying object is just that. It is unidentified, meaning there is, you know, like, we don't know what the fuck it is. Yeah. So,
I thought it was interesting that they, you know, they're saying balloons, but, like, these balloons is, like, big as two or three school buses. Like, they're, like, these things are huge, which is why they had to be careful, whatever
they're like blimps.
Yeah, to be careful where they shot them down.
So here's my question, though. All right. Let's just say these are the aliens. They coming. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, so were they not going to shoot back? Were they right. just like, we just going to take the L?
If anything, they're surveillance.
Like, were they recon? Were they
yeah, they're recon. I would say, I would guess they're recon. And also, like you just said, Sean, even though I also tease Jeffrey, I've said before, it's not that I don't believe it would be extremely arrogant, and it also goes against everything we do know about space and the solar system to assume that we are that not only are we the only intelligent life in the universe, but that there aren't, considering the amount of solar systems, galaxies, et cetera, that mm-hmm. there are.
Of course.
Like, there are definitely intelligent life forms far more advanced than us who are watching.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of footage online. You can see ships flying and stuff and going. I'm telling you. Okay, let me tell you what it is.
But I just don't think I just want to finish this one thought because I'm going to forget it. It baffles me, and maybe because it's a relatively new concept to accept in our society, that our idea of what alien life form to us or light or intelligent life form looks like is so limited, but also that we think is so improbable. Like, just given the entire scope and magnitude of the universe, of course there is intelligent life somewhere else out there. It is ridiculous to assume that we are the only ones. And it would also be ridiculous to assume that, again, if there's not somebody from another galaxy, from another whatever, that's already figured out how to come here, be here millennia before we even maybe came into existence. You know what I mean? Like,
they just found a planet that basically mirrors Earth. It's very similar in atmosphere and everything. They just found that I'm the alien guy, so I follow the Mars Instagram, where they show the pictures of Mars.
Who is running?
We're on Mars. Like, they
that is the most Jeff Slade shit I've ever heard in my life.
We've sent
rovers and stuff up to Mars. They've been there for at least a couple of years now. So there's an Instagram page where they show pictures of Mars, and there's water there, and there's stuff. It's kind of stuff that looks like it could be their shape.
Where is the new planet?
I forget where the new planet is. It's in another galaxy, but it very much mirrors Earth.
Well, I also don't think that the other intelligent life out there is necessarily carbon-based. So there's also that. Like,
also, what's happened with my theory is a lot of alien life form, for lack of a better term, on Earth, I think a lot of it is in the ocean. There's so much,
which is why we don't need to be down there.
Yeah, there's so much ocean that we still have never researched because of the depth and this and that. And I think they're down. I don't know if they're hiding is the right term, but I think some of it could be down there, and they come out whenever they see fit. You know,
I feel like every week there's a new creepy picture on my Twitter feed of some brand new thing they found in the ocean, and like, leave all of that shit where it is.
The ocean truthers who be like, they know what's down. First of all, like, all you need to do is do a little bit of research on the ocean to understand why we haven't explored more of the ocean depths than we have. People think when they say that so much, like 85% of the ocean is unexplored, people think they mean surface area. They don't really understand that the ocean is not the same depth everywhere.
Yes,
there's all kind of paleontic fucking prehistoric. Yeah,
before a lot of the ocean was
down there.
There were mountain ranges before they got covered with water, so they go.
There's a reason we can't survive down there.
Exactly, we're not supposed to be. I say this all the time. We are not fucking supposed to be down there. It's cold. It's dark, and it's heavy.
We're also not supposed to do shit like climb Kilimanjaro.
This right, is like leave
people
shit.
Are dying. We're supposed to stay in this little area. Of
right, this is the way. This is the way ecosystems.
We're supposed to stay.
This
stay
is
in Cleveland.
Ecosystems work. And while I understand
in Detroit,
like
in Cleveland,
I have an appreciation for science, but also like the way ecosystems work, we really just need to be leaving shit. We be opening fucking tombs.
Yeah, I don't like that. Like, I don't like the opening tombs shit. Thing. I don't like that.
Why are fucking we thawing out a glacier?
Fucking with shit that's in permafrost.
Bacteria.
Like, yeah, they're trying to bring back, they're working on, if they haven't done it yet, they're working on bringing back the woolly mammoth.
Like, stop. We all saw Jurassic Park. Stop. Ooh. Like, we've all seen, stop.
But you know what it is like with movies in a lot of cases what you're seeing in the movies is either happening or about to happen. It's like they're making up some stuff about the sky, but some stuff they're not. Same thing with Terminator movies, and now you see they got the robots. It's like the movies are kind of showing you what's coming. But, you know, we don't, you know, we're looking at it as entertainment.
The movies have shown us what's coming with feast, with famine, with climate change, with the dangers of AI, with, like, they've shown, like, all of it, and niggas don't listen, so.
You just be like, ah, that was dope.
The kind of science that I enjoy is, like, making the Brussels sprouts taste better this year than 20 years ago. I like science that is going to give me strawberries year round. I don't enjoy the science that
might start war
are doing right now. Let's not crossbreed spiders. Like, chill out.
All right. So we're going to see, you know, there's more alien life on, but I'll keep your post on the Mars IG.
I'm good, my nigga. You do not have to keep me posted. I promise you.
It's really interesting.
I'm good. They come down here. I'm gonna give them some barbecue and some greens. I don't owe nobody no money.
You know what I'm saying?
So
y'all good.
Y'all good. Why me, man?
You know, I'm gonna say, congratulations to the brat who's carrying a baby for her and her spouse. I don't know how many months pregnant she is, but
or as more simply said, is pregnant. Like, what the fuck?
What? Well, you know, she has a spouse. Like, they married, though. A
baby for her spouse. She's pregnant. The brat is pregnant. Congratulations.
Yeah, but she got a spouse. Like, they married.
Nigga put mad caveats.
This is where niggas get, like, this is why. I didn't want to make it seem like the brat was a single mother.
She's not. She's married.
I know, but if another married, like, you didn't say Rihanna is carrying a baby for her and her spouse.
She's not married.
She's pregnant.
Rihanna's not married.
Oh my God, nigga.
The brat is pregnant.
Congratulations to the brat and her wife. Brat is pregnant. That's all we need to say.
The married couple is welcome.
Good Lord, have mercy.
So yeah, so you know, God bless them. Good.
What's more remarkable about that story is that she's 48.
That's the thing. Like, people's brains are stuck on the gender roles in the relationship and all this other shit. I'm like, she's 48. I mean, it's doable. Kenya Moore did it. Janet did it. People do it. And if you got money to pay for healthcare and shit like that, you can do it. I think.
Let me tell you what my old ass is not able to do.
Right. But I think what I was going to say was, where people get stuck, part of the reason that the idea of sex and gender fluidity is so complicated for folks is that, instead of just taking the basics, which is this term means this, people start thinking about all the dynamics of what the relationship looks like and how it functions. And that's where your brain breaks. And that's what I see happening with people with Brad. They're like, but she's butch. And why in the other one, the wife, isn't she the husband? And why is she doing this and what? And I'm like, she's a woman who, she is a female who is able to carry it, but she has a uterus. She's having a baby. She might have wanted to experience pregnancy. Her wife has a child. Maybe Brad wants to know, like, who you want to have, who you are attracted to has nothing to do with whether you want to experience giving birth. Like, and honestly, those parts of the equation are none of our business. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and that's why niggas be like, I'm confused, because you thinking about shit that's not your business instead of just the basics. Brad and her wife are having a baby. Brad's pregnant. The amazing part of that, like Inka said, is that she is 48.
She's almost 50, yeah. I guess I didn't realize she was that old, but yeah, I mean, now that I think about it, yeah, you know, everybody's 50. also wanted to talk. I saw this thing on TikTok that was, so this girl, I can't remember her name now, Carlita. I think it's Carlita V. She posted this this TikTok about she was dating a dude for a year, and that dude adamantly said, "I don't want to post no pictures. I want to keep it safe, you know, safe and private and blah, 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 blah." And then she found out, of course, that he had a whole nother girlfriend. He had a whole nother girlfriend.
I haven't seen the update. Yeah, so what it was is this girl's in a relationship. The guy asked her, was like, "I'm not comfortable posting you on my socials until
1 year.
We're engaged."
Oh, is that what it is? It was engaged.
Yeah. She was like, "It's been a year. Why can't I post you? Like, you've been my boyfriend for a year." She posted a picture of like the back of his head. He got really upset. So she deaded the relationship. She was like, "I don't know who, you know, I don't have evidence of anything, but like just the fact that I can't share you with my audience or whoever that is makes me think differently about you." So she ended the relationship. So I guess she put it on TikTok like, "This is who he is." Yeah. You know, whoever
his name is, Derwin.
We've been together for a year.
Yeah.
I'm done with it. So you said that there's an
update. Yeah, there's an update. He had another relationship. She spoke to the girl, and the dude would take her, and the dates were very similar. Like the dates that they would go on were very similar, like with the other girl too. And he told the other girl the same shit. "I don't want to post because I want to keep it private." So he was basically gaming both of them. And then it was very interesting to me that there was a bunch of TikToks under her page with other women saying this happened to them too, like this whole kind of thing. And I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah,
that
I think it's a tricky thing, right? Because like Jason and I haven't posted. Well, Jason did post me on social media before we were actually dating again, but it was because he went to an event I did. I haven't posted him on my socials at all. And I think like for me, it's not intentional either one of our parts so much as it is like I don't want niggas to start clicking on his page and trying to be all in his business like, who is this? But he doesn't have a problem with that because he's not really heavy on socials himself. But like I know some people probably saw what she said and was like, "Y'all niggas need, you know, everybody, you need your business all up on social media, relationship all up on social media." But there's a line, right? Like there's a difference between branding your relationship and occasionally posting y'all coming out of Easter service. You know what I'm saying? Like, or something, you know, like,
why I don't think she, I didn't get the vibe that she was, I didn't get the vibe that she was trying to brand a relationship.
Well, no. Like, and I'm saying, I don't think she was, but that's what people jump to. They be like, "I don't know why y'all need to, y'all so desperate to post people." Yeah. Some people act like any desire to post your partner is trying to do it for the gram. When like, no, if I share parts of my life on social media, and you're a part of my life, if I have to make a concerted effort to keep you off my socials, that's when it's a problem, right? Like, there's a difference between going out of my way to put us on socials and having to actually, like, make a concerted effort.
Censor myself.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why I mentioned a while ago, I still be thrilled with the gals that go, you see them in Mexico or Turks or whatever, and it's clearly somebody taking the pictures, right?
Right.
So, but
this
it's like
has bothered you for years.
Yeah, because I'm like, now some of them go on girls trips and do that stuff. That's fine.
But some of them are using their Instagram as a platform for their OnlyFans or for money. Like some of them are really, that's a brand thing. They're not trying to make money.
But this it was some girl. I can't remember, she's an attractive girl. And I was, me and somebody was talking about it online. And he was like, "Man, she's bad, man." And I was like, "Bro, who do you think is taking the pictures?"
Right.
What are you talking about? So I'm just, again, maybe it's me, man, I'm an old nigga.
It's not just you, but you got to remember, for some of these girls, they really do want to keep up.
I know, but let me finish.
The fantasy.
But if I take a girl to anywhere, but I'm Cabo, Tulum, Turks, what do you mean I can't take a pic? What are you talking about? This is thousands of dollars.
Maybe
I'm an older. I'm an older nigga.
Processing this as a regular. We seeing each other as a date. That's not what this is transactional.
Like a lot of people are very okay with their situation being transactional. Like they're not tripping on you not posting me. Like some people are, you know what I'm saying? Like it's whatever. Like I'm gonna go drop 7K because I can, and we gonna go be real nasty for a few days, and then I'm going back to my life on Tuesday, and I don't really Sounds need amazing. To. Yeah, like you know what I'm saying? Like I'm not running your mother to Walgreens. Like I'm not
right.
Doing
like I'm not about to come over and help you move your couch.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm not painting. The fuck are you talking
Walgreens.
About?
Walgreens.
You better call.
You better come paint this bathroom if I ask you to. I know you lying.
not after he bought you that Chanel boy bag.
Not after
you know
what
he
was doing on the balcony. You better bring your ass over here in the staff room. Absolutely not.
It's a different thing. I mean,
wow.
Jeffrey, it's a different era. It's a different thing. But like, to some of this shit is transactional. And if you're not a transactional person, and it's also a thing of like, you like these are niggas who probably wouldn't have been able to get to that girl if it wasn't
for
I'm
the
gonna
paper.
Take you here, right? Yeah. So the trade-off is you get this ass, you get my company. Why would I actually identify you as part of my life? You know what I'm saying? Like that's not a thing.
You paying for your toes to get curled, nigga. Ain't nobody
also that nigga probably ugly and he gonna fuck up my brand aesthetic on my page.
So you're not gonna be around in 6 months. Like
we're being honest here, right? Like ugly niggas know when they ugly. They know when somebody got posting them.
They know they hit it. They way out their league.
Hello.
Like let's be fair here. Women as well. You know what I'm saying. You know it's very clear, and that is okay. But again, you see this as because in your mind, it's very difficult for you to wrap your head around doing something that extravagant for someone that you are not interested in.
Yeah,
and so it's very difficult. It's very difficult for you to process that. But like for these guys now, like that's a part of their. That's a part of their dating, not dating. That's a part of their ecosystem. That's a part of their ecosystem. For us, it is not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To the original like topic, the original poster or whatever, that nigga was a liar. So I hope that she is doing well.
He was trash. I want to say one more thing kind of on the social media IG thing. I've been noticing, and maybe I just haven't noticed it before, but I've just been noticing, and maybe this, again, sound like the old nigga, but this newer generation is so, what's it called? Like, when you don't care, like
lackadaisical.
Yeah, they just don't care. They don't care
apathetic,
exactly. I just feel like there are definitely some social warriors out there for sure, but there's just a lot of them that just, don't care. Like I was looking at this post about the gorilla nigga, right? Mm-hmm. He's got a new post when he's with some there's a chicken nigga, right? And I guess they're together.
Oh, and they did a cut. Oh my god, it's so embarrassing.
It's so embarrassing. But like, there's a lot of people under that. Like, yo, why does it bother you as long as he's doing his thing? I'm like, because.
But you know what
it's
that
the culture. It's the culture that's being affected by this coon shit.
I think that falls under the header of just live a little bit longer, honestly, because there are some things that, especially Gen Z is both super woke and thinks we live in a post-racial society at the same time. And
absolutely.
It's like, it's a weird dichotomy, the shit that they're outraged by, but the shit that they also think shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
And some of this really is not going to hit them. Like, one of the things I have to consistently remind myself is that, you know, our generation and older millennials, we're the last ones who really heard the war stories firsthand, like sat at the feet, heard it, saw remnants of it when we went to visit family, you know what I'm saying? Like, like really saw it. And a lot of these folks, especially these kids who have grown up, kids and young adults, let me not sound old motherfuckers just saying kids and young adults who have grown up primarily online with barriers, with regional barriers and global barriers very blurred and with exposure to a lot more things, have not yet had to be in real life situations where they see the impact of these things play out, right? So some of this for me has to go through, like, I can remember being a kid and doing various things and, you know, being told it's embarrassing to the family, to the race, it's disgraceful, due to this, due to that. And I think a lot of them, they mix it up with respectability politics. But to your point, like, it is like the optics are dangerous, but you can't really explain to them why they're dangerous.
Yeah, they don't get it. It's like they don't get it. It's like as long as it's hot on social media, that makes it.
I think that is a testament to what previous generations have done, is because we have all for a very long time, we had kind of wiped out, or we had always been so strong against those images that anything that was even remotely close to it, like, we called it like immediately because it became so clear to us, particularly those of us whose parents were civil rights or segregation parents, right? Like, if they were born in that, our eyes are very different. And so what we're seeing is young adults now, 20, 22, 23 years old, that have really grown up in a world that has not, that really went through that Obama phase of, like, racism is over. Everything is. And so what they do now is, you know, they don't want to be considered monolithic. They don't want to be, it's not that they don't always want to be considered Black, but they don't want to always be considered grouped in that way. Right. And then there's this other perception.
And there's also this idea of not shaming people. And I'm like, we need to bring public shame back a little bit.
Yeah. And listen, I think that guy is harmful because he's so innocuous with it, right? But like because it is such an easy thing to watch, and how easily he moves in these spaces, and how he clearly either doesn't recognize or doesn't care to recognize what those images are. Like, there's a picture of him, like, with the watermelon. Like,
I think it's worth mentioning that's when he changed his name, but he didn't change his behavior. He changed his name.
Yeah, because it was Dancing Gorilla, or Big Gorilla.
My thing is, like, I also noticed with him and the Chicken Cooney nigga, they ain't nothing but white people around when they're shooting this.
Nope.
Yeah, because I think, go ahead, Inka, I'm sorry.
I think it's worth mentioning that this person is Nigerian.
Okay.
I don't think he was born here.
I always got non-African American vibes from dude. I didn't need to know where he was from, but I knew that a nigga whose daddy name was Clarence and came from Mississippi was not doing that shit. Like, I knew that. So but I think that what it does is like, there is always and a part of this is the idea, and I might be reaching here, but the idea that African Americans are always angry and always upset and always sensitive. And I think that Black people that are not African American don't think that our beefs with those images and with that behavior are legitimate.
You're legit, yeah.
That they're seen as race card, or they're seen as us being very, very sensitive unnecessarily, right? Because for him, this has been profitable. Now, apparently, this guy is a boxer by trade. I follow somebody. They kind of went down a rabbit hole, and he's a boxer by trade. Like, he literally trains to box, which I found very interesting because he's massive.
Yeah,
but okay, and then he he's a boxer by trade, and I'm like, oh, so this is what is putting food on the table, because clearly being a boxer is not food on the table, right? And so this is why I don't share. This is why I don't engage. There is nothing more powerful than harnessing Black rage for profit. Like, if you can get Black folks pissed off enough, we will engage you in a way that ultimately becomes profitable for you.
Yep.
And I understand the need to do that, because there's a point where you feel like you need to call everything out. But I've also gotten to the point now where I don't feel like this is worthy of the interaction. Yeah. Right. It is more beneficial for me.
Yes. It's helping him.
Yeah, right. Block, you know what's crazy on. Though? You know who else is a boxer who is using their TikTok to make money? Keith Lee.
Yeah, who I fuck with.
Who everybody fucks with, because he's a genuine person. He's not offending anybody. He's looking to help people, and he's spreading joy, just like weird people who are saying this gorilla dude is doing.
Yeah, gorilla dude is spreading joy to white people who find this shit funny, right? But also, there is also, and I'm not going to say this is new to this generation, but, you know, there is a certain level of sucking and jiving and minstrelsy, I don't know if that's a word, we just made it up, we know what you mean, yeah, that people find that even some black people find amusing, right? Like low-hanging fruit, physical comedy, whatever. But this, to me, again, context matters, and I know I sound old when I say that shit, but it's like, I think also part of the problem with the content that we see and we perpetuate is that Gen X as a bridge generation, we dropped the ball a little bit, because so much stuff was just, so there's so much stuff that we just learned inherently without it being an effort to have been taught to us, just because of who we were around, what we were around, the era in which we grew up. And now there's so much content and information, but it's so siloed. And also, we're so far removed, right? Like this, the last two generations, like each generation is further removed from the struggle. We about to hit a reset, obviously, on the civil rights struggle and everything, but they're so far removed from the realities of lack of rights, overt, like it's happening again, but even in it happening again, so many people don't want to believe it's possible, because
you're like, that can't happen.
We're watching it happen, and motherfuckers are like, "Oh no, it's not that." And I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about?
It can't happen." But you know, keep watching. Keep watching Florida. Keep watching.
Yeah, they're
Florida.
Like, "No, so an active congressman isn't actually throwing up a white power sign on the floor." Of course he is. Yes, Tom Thurman is beaming from beyond the fucking realm. You know what I'm saying? Like, because we got active racists in Congress who are openly racist again. Like, it is happening. But there is a ball that's been dropped, where people don't want to admit, like, people don't like to admit regression, social regression is very possible.
That's my whole point. The regression is killing me.
Also, I think that for a lot of young people, and I'll just be quite frank, man, like, as much as I love being black and would never trade it, like, it is a work to have to call out shit at every turn.
Yeah.
To have to always kind of have your guard up to some degree. And I think that they really want to, they are young enough to have the desire to want to live in this utopic society. They haven't had the life experience enough to know that that shit is going to come one way or another. So it may not be a dog biting you, and it may not be a hose on your ass, but that same sentiment is going to come in another way. Yeah, and they just haven't really, they haven't been opened and experienced enough to see
and
that.
And I also think the difference is, like, when we came of age, like, and the kids are experiencing like a cultural blackness, but it's about black joy, black creativity, celebration of blackness. When we were coming of age, it was about militancy and
We was like 8 watching Eyes on the Prize, nigga.
It was about
every night.
We were walking around with African medallions at 12 years old.
Nigga,
you know what I'm saying?
Nigga, like, we were legitimately, that was a school assignment, nigga. Like, write a report on Eyes on the Prize, write a report on Roots.
Nigga, like, everybody was
absolutely. Watching Gil Noble on Sundays.
We read the autobiography of Malcolm X as leisure reading in 9th grade. You know what I'm saying? Like, niggas was taking X names and joining the Nation of Islam at 14 years old. Like, this is what it was for us, right? But that was what was embedded in our culture.
But it was celebratory,
but it was very clear. It was within the context of, fuck y'all white people. We are gonna stand separate from y'all. You can't take it from us, right? And this is more about y'all not going to kill our joy, which is beautiful. I love that too. Yeah. But ours was more about we are going to forcibly be Black in your face, forcibly, and we're going to fight for it. It was a different energy.
But it was also the media images. We saw that stuff on Different World.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby. Like, even back to Good Times, you see some of that, you know, some of the things that, you know, that they would say, like, the white man, this and that. Like, those things are reinforced through the media, through the music.
Right.
You know, with Marvin Gaye and some others and Earth, Wind & Fire and everything was always kind of driven through the music. And now it's just off the rails, man. Black joy is fly. I'm not mad at that.
Black
at all.
Is beautiful. Black joy, Black being beautiful, celebration of Blackness is fly, but you gotta keep it in the context of why we need to celebrate it, right?
Also, like,
go ahead,
I'm
Sean.
Sorry. Also, like, nigga, it's like seven things that you can't fucking do, okay? And tap dancing with chicken is one of them. Can we just like set the bar, my nigga?
Very narrow. Like
it's a very narrow window. Like, don't put on this. Don't do this. Like right. There's like several different things that you are asked to not do in mixed company, my nigga. Like, and the way he does it, and again, I don't know. That young man, right? Like, I'm assuming he's young. He looks to be fairly young.
Yeah,
I don't know that young man. I don't know his journey. He looks to be, and also too, like, can we stop with this? I'm a big Black guy, so I have to do this sort of weird
to be non-threatening.
Yes, I have to do all of the shit to like not be seen as aggressive, because I think he's subconsciously doing that without even realizing it, to be honest. I would just love someone to sit him down and say, look, man, like here is what we see.
Right. You ain't gotta show every single last one of your teeth.
Yeah, and all the time, my nigga, like all the time. Like, it's just, it's, and
like,
and
I know
you don't need to
hurt,
see your bare thighs.
Your jaw hurts. Your
and you, and you, I don't and, need and, your bare thighs out. And also, and, it's upsetting.
And, like, and your man's with the chicken. It's just like, come on, bro. Like, you know, and ain't nobody saying that, oh, I can't eat chicken in front of white people. Like, sure, nigga, fried chicken is delicious. Eat it.
But you don't need to be standing on the fucking table and driving dancing, it into your mouth and, from yeah, overhead. Like,
come on, man. Come on, man. Come on, man. Come on. We got bare minimums here.
Yeah.
Listen, if I'm having brunch and either one of these niggas are coming toward the door, I'm blocking it.
Nah.
You can't come in here with that. Matter of fact,
and I'm not paying this bill, nigga. Y'all comping me for even bringing the niggas around me.
Right. So that was it. That's what I'm going to do. We're going to wrap it up on that.
Well, we got a rest in peace.
Oh, wait.
Kind of a huge one. Dave from De La Soul.
Oh, yes.
Passed away earlier last week at 54.
Yeah. Congestive heart failure.
Yeah, and their catalog comes to streaming next week, the third. Finally, after
a long-fought battle
with Tommy Boy,
Just because they didn't foresee any of this happening, so it was difficult to get on streaming when you're in the late 80s. Nobody knew that this is where music would go to. So,
yeah, mechanical rights are like a whole nother monster, but for De La, it was also. It wasn't just the mechanical rights. There was also like just some ownership issues that they were going through with Tommy Boy for clearances and stuff like that. And you know, I give De La all the credit in the world. Like, ironically, when we talk about Native Tongues, like Jungle Brother started it, but De La kind of broke it open.
Mm-hmm.
And I once got a chance to talk to Paz, and he was saying that like, they didn't even know what was happening, how big 3 Feet was blowing up, because they were on tour. And all of a sudden, like at every show, like more and more people knew they shit. It was bigger and bigger. But they, you know, there's no social media, there's no internet. They had no idea. And they were kind of like this weirdly, like, you know, they're like the non-commercial hip hop group, you know. So the tributes, you know, we're very moving, but as somebody who was hugely influenced, like Native Tongues were such a vital part of of my cultural experience, you know, coming of age, but also now, like, as an industry executive and somebody who's been doing this for a long time, like, I had such a great admiration for how they moved as they got older. They never split up as a group. They were never beefing that we know of. They were always on the same page, and they were always like, listen, we doing this the way we want to do it. Fuck y'all. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and they were like a Grateful Dead-ish kind of group that they just toured from the time they started. They just constantly toured around the world for the last 30 years or so.
Yeah, they put out, you know, independent releases. Yep. They were like, we just going to do this our way. And our I respect it. So Dave had apparently been in and out of hospital often. Somebody who knows him said that the reason that Paz was the only one at the Grammys because Dave had gone to the hospital either that night or night before. But people weren't alarmed because he was in and out of the hospital often.
Yeah.
This was not,
Didn't think this would be it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So I just, you know, 54 is so young to lose somebody, period. But it pains me that it happened like less than a month before they finally this come to fruition, you know?
I wonder what Paz and Mace do now. Do they keep touring with just the two of them?
I don't know. I imagine they kind of have to, you know, like, I don't know.
I guess, you know, they got time to figure it
Before we wrap, because we didn't do TV, I just want to give a shout out. I'm surprised you don't watch this show. Jeffrey, I started binging, to tell the truth be told, with, not Viola Davis. What's that girl name?
Octavia
Spencer.
Spencer.
And Gabrielle, it's on Union, Apple TV. Randomly. It is Octavia Spencer, Mekhi Phifer, Tammy Roman, who actually is really good.
Really good
in it. Like, really good in it. It's Gab Homegirl Union from Rent, whose name I can never remember, except this Homegirl from Rent. It's the dude from, what you call it? Who plays Sterling Brown's estranged father on This Is Us. Yeah. I mean, and it's set in Oakland. Oh, and it's a Michael Beach, and now it's in season three now, and it's Gabrielle Union. It's like Octavia is actually honestly the outlier in that show. She almost doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. It's so good and messy and juicy and black.
It's Apple TV.
Yeah,
Apple TV. So it's Ron Cephas Jones is the guy from This Is Us.
Okay.
And Hanifa Wood, I think, is the lady you're referring to.
The girl from Rent. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Kate Hudson is in it, which is interesting.
Who?
Kate Hudson.
Oh, yeah. Kate Hudson is in season two.
Yeah.
She's in season two.
All right.
So this is season three, right?
Yeah, this is season three.
Right.
So it's really interesting. Octavia Spencer is messy as fuck. But the family that she's from, right? Like her, because like I said, it's set in between, it's set in the Bay. So she's from Oakland. Her father is still the leader of like this black biker gang that's also like, you know, like kind of street, like kind of like a Hell's Angels type situation on the street. So there is a lot of reference to the actual like racial dynamics and social justice and civil rights.
It's based in current time.
It's current time, but her father refers to back in the day a lot.
Or how it used to be, kind
of
shit.
Yeah, and a lot of his mannerisms. He's just such an old black man. He's such an old civil rights nigga who moved like within the on the outskirts of the law, like blurred the lines a little bit. And Tammy is his much younger wife, second wife. It's a really good show. And at some points the dialogue is just fucking excellent. Like,
okay.
There's one point where her little sister steps to Kate Hudson, and like that scene was like, I rewound that shit like three times. I was laughing so hard. Like old girl from Greenleaf, the one who plays the main Greenleaf sister, she's in it too. She's Mekhi Phifer's wife.
I'm gonna watch that. I still haven't watched Woman King.
I haven't either. I need to.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Yes, on Netflix. Yeah, I want to watch that too.
Denzel has a new movie on Netflix.
Does
it? Randomly with Mark Wahlberg.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't watched it yet.
I had no idea.
But I wanted to mention Real Housewives of Potomac real quick.
Oh, yeah. That reunion was crazy.
First episode of the reunion came on Sunday. And I just want to applaud Candace for...
Yeah.
I appreciate her arc as just a character from season one to now is incredible growth. Giselle absolutely deserved that dragging. And Charlotte, like...
And it looked like part two
going to be even... But it was necessary.
Part two looked like going to be even iller. So,
I love it. Yeah, Chance for Robin, get her out of here.
Yeah.
Let
they're
me
saying,
go
they're
home
saying
her
and
her shit.
They're saying Robin and Sharice on the chopping block.
They should be.
And they say for Married to Medicine, Contessa's out, Anila's out, and they're bringing Dr. Greg back with his new wife.
Oh, shit. I'm in.
Yeah. So it's
I'm
about
ready.
To, it's about to be
I did watch, what's the joint in DC on OWN?
Oh, Love and Marriage DC.
That's, Love and Marriage DC. I watched a bit of that. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. And, yeah. It's
shout
better
out
than...
to the Nobles. So, Reggie and Brittany. Reggie's dad is the therapist on the last episode. So, Dr. Cunningham, who is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's on the show, which I thought was really cool. Was
oh, like, shit.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, he
I
was
didn't
cool.
Know Reggie's dad.
I liked him. He was cool.
Yeah.
What kind of wisdom. Reggie
wait, your friend's name is Reggie Noble? Like Redman?
I know. I was like,
it's Reggie Cunningham.
That's his nickname. That's his real
Kid
name.
Noble on Twitter. So
I was about to be like, what Redman got to do with this?
Yeah, I was like, Redman?
The Nobles.
I like Love and Magic DC. I like it better than.
It's like a. They're real people.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just a bunch of yelling and mess. It's like real situations, like the kid going to therapy and this and that, and you know, quick getting the name, the street named after him. And it's more realistic than just like, who's messing with who? And here come Wanda, the tab shit. It's like, they got to flip something on
Wanda.
Wanda's a mess. But on that note, we're going to wrap it up. We'll see y'all next week, sometime next week. Hopefully, we'll all be better, be out of the sick and shut in.
Yeah.
Just pray for me, listeners.
We're praying.
All right. Let me add you to my prayer. Actually, since it's the Lenten season, let me add you to my prayer.
Yeah, add her to the prayer list.
I don't think I told listeners at all, but I've been coughing for like a year. And it's at the point where it's like breaking my ribs.
That's crazy.
So that's we got to, they're trying to figure out what's wrong with me and it hurts. So
I bet.
Let's figure this out.
Yeah. All right. We'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.